Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Thank you very much for all of you who've already donated to our pledge drive. And for everyone else, there's still time, so please consider a donation. Your donation of any amount, for example, a dollar a podcast would be $52 for the year, would make a real difference and would be much appreciated. You can donate anytime online at donate.pardesusa.org. Thanks very much. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parshat Bamidbar. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Bamidbar, which opens up the book of Bamidbar. As I mentioned in another podcast, the rabbis in the Talmud refer to this book as the Book of Pikudim, or as we know it in English, Numbers, based on the fact that there are censuses which appear in this book. Last year, we examined the introduction to the book of the Netziv, who specifically compares the census in our parsha in chapter 1 with the census in chapter 26, and develops the theme of the movement in the book of the changing reality from the generation that left Egypt to the generation that is poised to enter the land of Israel. Today, I would like to examine our parsha. Let us begin by noting that in our parsha, there are in fact three censuses. In chapter 1, there is a census of the general male population above the age of 20. In chapter 3, a census of the tribe of Levi, of the males above the age of 1 month. And in chapter 4, a second counting of the tribe of Levi, but of the males between the age of 30 to 50. I would like to compare and contrast these censuses. When we compare them, it is interesting to note the words that are used for counting. Both by the general Jewish population and by the Levites, there are two expressions which are very important. In chapter 1, verse 2, we're told, Sa et Rosh b'nei Israel, Su'u et Rosh kol adat b'nei Israel, lift up the head of all the congregation of Israel. And at the end of verse 3, Tifkidu otam, count them. Sa et Rosh, tifkod. What is the meaning of tifkod, the nuance? At the end of chapter 1, we're told with respect to the tribe of Levi, chapter 1, verse 49, But the tribe of Levi you shall not count, lo tifkod, their head you shall not lift up, do not, rosham lo tisa, in the midst of the Jewish people. And then in verse 50, the ata hafked et halviim, but you hafked. It is very clear that there is a play on words here between tifkod and hafked. Rashi quotes the Aramaic translation, Targum Unculus, who says that the word hafked means appoint. Appoint the Levites on the tabernacle, on all the utensils therein. They will raise up the tabernacle and its utensils. They will service it. They will encamp surrounding the tabernacle. From this verse, it is very clear that the word tifkod, which has to do with counting, is connected with the idea of appointing, or perhaps another word, tafkid, which means assigning a role. God tells Moshe, do not count the Levites among the general Jewish population. They need to have a separate counting, which is what appears in chapter 3 and 4. Why? Because their role is different. In another podcast, I discussed the idea that Judaism has a problem with censuses. Censuses that reduce people to being numbers, statistics. If we are already taking a census, it should lift one up rather than dehumanize them. And the way we lift them up is by assigning them a role. And therefore, it is important to note, what is that role which is being assigned to the general Jewish population versus the role which is being assigned to the tribe of Levi? At face value, when we look at the census in chapter 1, the role of the general Jewish population is to be Yotzei Tzava. And as I said, at face value, that means to serve in the army. And in fact, the Levites did not serve in the army. They were exempted. It is the general Jewish population who are the ones to go and fight. And again, at face value, the reason why the general Jewish population is counted in chapter 1 is in anticipation of the conquest of the land of Israel. Before we fight, it is important to know the numbers. The numbers of those who we can count upon to go out in battle. They're assigned a role. And as we know, in the army, you have different armed forces. Navy, army, air force, artillery, tanks. And one could argue even in ancient times, there was this division of labor where each one was assigned a specific task as part of the larger force. But I think that there is another dimension to this. I mentioned that, in fact, the Levites did not go out to battle. And yet, in chapter 4, when they are counted, the men between the ages of 30 to 50, they are referred to in chapter 4, verse 3, called Balatzava, those who come to the army, which is very puzzling. What army? It says, La'asot melacha ba'ohel mo'ed, to do the work of God in the tent of meeting. It seems very clear to me from this verse that the concept of tzava is not necessarily military. Tzava means an organized group with a clearly defined goal. Hopefully, an army reflects that definition, but it is a much broader concept. And therefore, what I would like to focus on is this role division between the general Jewish population that are yotzei, that go out, and the Levites who are the ones who come in. If I had to phrase it a little bit differently, the general Jewish population are involved with the external functioning of the Jewish people. The Levi'im consolidate them internally. And what does that mean? The Netziv, in his introduction, sees the censuses in our parsha and the whole organization of the camp of the people of Israel as creating what he calls the chariot of God. The chariot of God that march in a royal procession, transporting the king on his throne, which in our case means the divine presence, which is housed, which dwells in the tabernacle. On a number of occasions, I have spoken about the idea of establishing the presence of God in the midst of the Jewish people. This is the role of the Levi'im. The role of the general Jewish population is to bring that divine presence to the outside world, to be the conduit that creates that interface. Let me go back to the Levi'im. When we look at chapter 3, when their role is more clearly defined, God says in chapter 3, verse 6, "Bring near the tribe of Levi. Stand them up before Aaron the priest. Let them serve him. Let them guard his guarding and the guarding of the whole community before the tent of meeting to do the work of the service of the tabernacle. They will guard all of the utensils." And once again, to work the service of the tabernacle. And in verse 10, "And charge Aaron and his sons tifkod," which could also be understood as counting, but here would seem to be more in the sense of appointing, that they should guard their priesthood, and the stranger who comes near will die. Based on these verses, Nachmanides draws an interesting parallel between the tabernacle and Mount Sinai. We've already seen in another podcast how Maimonides draws the parallel between Mount Sinai, where the presence of God is to be found, which is then perpetuated in the tabernacle, where the glory of God fills the tabernacle. That is in the end of the book of Shemot. But here in Bamidbar, Maimonides draws another parallel. In the same way that God said, "Fence off the mountain, make sure that nobody should go up there, people and animals, because whoever will go up the mountain will burst forth, will break, create a breach, that person will die." In our parsha, it is the Levim who are that fence, who are that barrier that is supposed to guard the Mishkan to make sure that strangers do not penetrate it, lest they die. And one could raise the question, why is it necessary for God to have these guardians? How can they possibly protect the Mishkan more than God? And Nachmanides quotes a very interesting rabbinic comment, which says, "There is no comparison between a palace which has guardians to a palace which does not have guardians." And he adds, "And all of this is a way of highlighting the majesty, the honor of God. The purpose of the guardians is not for God. It is for us. The purpose of fencing off the mountains is for us on two levels. First and foremost, it is a way of saying to us, this is a place which is off limits. This is a place which has grandeur. Realize you don't have free access. Realize that this is a place which is awesome. So that the major thrust is to instill in us that sense of awe. The corollary of that is that if we treat this place lightly, it is deadly. So that on the one hand, there is this educational role that the Levim fill to impress upon the people the magnitude of the presence of God in their midst, and at the same time to be a buffer, to be a protector of the people, to make sure that the people will live and not die as a result of the presence of God in their midst. The second role of the Levim is to work, do service in the tabernacle. It is not clear from the text what exactly they do. We see in chapter 4 that whenever the tabernacle is on the move, their role is to transport it. But from chapter 3, it seems that they are the assistants of Aharon. We know from the book of Vayikra that Aharon and his sons are the ones who actually function, who do the service of the sacrifices. The Levites do what we could call the peripheral jobs. According to rabbinic tradition, in the temple, the Levites would open up the doors of the temple. They would sing as the sacrifices are being brought. So that the role of the Levi'im, if we take these two aspects into account, is to guarantee the maximum functioning of the tabernacle. To guarantee that presence of God in the midst of the Jewish people. To make sure that that presence of God will imbue the Jewish people with a sense of awe, grandeur, will in fact raise them up, and will in no way be violated. If the role of the Levi'im is to consolidate the presence of God in the midst of the Jewish people, the role of the general Jewish population is to bring out that presence of God beyond the walls of the tabernacle into the general reality. If we had to put it in modern language, to not just see the presence of God in the Beit Midrash, in the Beit Knesset, but to be able to bring that presence of God in every facet of our existence, in government, in commerce, in science, in art, and where need be, in defense. So that these two elements of the population complement each other. They have different roles and hence are counted upon, each one, in their area. There is a need for domestic affairs and foreign affairs. Two sides of the same coin. Everything which I have said is looking at the idea of tifkidu, the counting as connected with a role. But as I mentioned, there's another expression, sa et rosh, su et rosh, lifting their head. Lifting their head is very much connected with the idea of the role. The purpose of the role is to raise them up, to be a way of maximizing the potential of all those who are given that assignment. But there is another side to it. When you give people roles, there are expectations. There's responsibility. If you live up to the expectations, it is majestic. But if you fail, it can be deadly. And as I've mentioned in a previous podcast, Nachmanides draws a very interesting parallel to the story in Bereishit of the butler and the baker who are in prison with Joseph, who have dreams and are troubled by their dreams. And when Joseph solves the dreams, he says to the butler, in another 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head, yisa et roshecha, the same expression we find here. Pharaoh will acknowledge you. And what will he do? Vahashivcha al kanecha. He will reinstate you in your office. But with respect to the butler, Joseph says, in another 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head. Yisat roshcha. But afterwards it says, mei alecha, from you. V'talaot chaleitz, he will hang you on a tree. The butler and the baker both had the privilege of serving Pharaoh. The two of them were thrown into jail for having somehow abused their roles. For whatever reason, without going into the details now, the butler is given a second chance, is reinstated, but the baker is put to death. And that story illustrates how being given a role, how having one's head raised, being acknowledged, is a double-edged sword. It can lift you up and give you majesty, give you status, but if the expectations are not realized, or worse, are thwarted, then it becomes deadly. It is very interesting that in our two censuses of the general population and of the tribe of Levi, we in fact see the negative repercussions later on in the book of Numbers, in the book of Bamidbar. The general Jewish population, when they are on the threshold of entering the land of Israel, send out spies in chapter 13. And when the spies come back with their report, the response of the general population is, why is God doing this? Why is God setting us up for the kill? Let us go back to Egypt. At that moment, when they are being counted upon to go forward, take possession of the land of Israel, conquer it, God is counting upon them to now help actualize the destiny of the Jewish people. They fail. And as a result, in chapter 14, God tells Moshe, that generation will not enter the land of Israel. They will die, similar to the fate of the baker. And unfortunately, there is another story later on in chapter 16, which involves the tribe of Levi, the infamous rebellion of Korach, where the issue is raised, why should only Aaron be allowed to serve? Why should he be the priest? Why can't other people serve? In effect, the tribe of Levi, which has been given the role to guard the tabernacle, to make sure that the stranger will not enter it, will not violate it, where in this case the stranger means a non-Kohen. He should not enter it and serve God, because that is only given to the Kohanim to do. And that very tribe of Levi fails in that role. Rather than being the guardians They become the threat, which results in the death of 250 men who are offering the incense. In a certain respect, the book of Bamidbar reflects a tragedy, reflects the loss of two groups who are given roles, who have the opportunity to now bring about the actualization of the Jewish people, being a kingdom of priests, a holy people, to becoming the chariot of God. And instead of becoming that chariot, they in the end fall apart. And it requires a new generation to grow up and somehow put the pieces together. One last comment. There is a very interesting parallel between the beginning of the book of Bamidbar and the beginning of the book of Bereshit. In Bereshit, we are told of the creation of the world, a world which is where everything is Kitov. Chapter 1, where human beings now are given charge, rule over the world, conquer it. In certain ways, chapter 1 echoes the idea which I expressed in chapter 1 of Bamidbar, of the general Jewish population, who are the Yotzei Tzava, those who are supposed to go out, conquer the land, but not just militarily, but to somehow bring the presence of God, express it in every way that the land functions. In chapter 2, we have the story of the Garden of Eden. And note the mandate which God gives Adam in the garden. He places him in the garden, le'ovda u'lishomra, to serve it, to guard it. It is not coincidental that these two words, le'ovda u'lishomra, is exactly what appears in our chapter 3 as the role of the Levi'im in the tabernacle. The tabernacle is the Garden of Eden. And perhaps this can also explain chapter 1 and chapter 2 of Bereshit. There is the world at large, where humanity is supposed to develop that world, become this agent of God, become a partner with God in the majesty of development of the world, of somehow bringing out the presence of God in that world. But there is another reality, the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden, which is like a tabernacle, a temple, a place which is exclusive in the sense of service of God, which is to be guarded. Because God's presence is so concentrated, not anyone can come in. According to a number of commentaries, when Adam and Eve are guarding the garden, who are they guarding it from? The animals. The animals have no place in the garden. The garden is the place where people serve God. But even more than that, they have to guard the garden from themselves to make sure that they appreciate the magnitude of the garden so that they are truly its guardians rather than its threat. Unfortunately, Adam and Eve did not know how to guard the garden. In the end, they lose the garden. And the rest of Bereshit perhaps describes a certain deterioration, a loss, a break in the relationship between people and God, a break in the relationship among people, between people and their reality. And we see a similar pattern that happens in Bamidbar. Somehow people are not able to actualize their roles, and this leads to a whole generation dying in the desert. It leads to a serious delay in the entry to the land. And even when they come to the land, it's on different terms. The message that I would like to end with is that it is a very positive thing to be counted. It is very positive to be given a role. But it is important for us to appreciate the responsibility, the stakes, to realize that when we are counted, it creates an unbelievable opportunity to actualize our majesty. But when we fail, it can bring about total destruction. Learning the Chumash, learning these stories, should be an educational endeavor that helps us learn from the mistakes of the past and to aspire to a brighter future. Our goal is to bring back that presence of God, to truly become that chariot, to be able to see how we can somehow close ranks, maximize that potential of the Jewish people within, so that somehow that presence of God is what bonds us together, and as a result of that, to be able to then truly become a light unto the nations. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. That donation URL is donate.pardesusa.org, in case you were forgetting it from the top of the show. Thanks again for tuning in, and please check back next week for another episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.